This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/joelduggan to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible.
This is the Citadel Cafe.
This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 153 for Wednesday, June 24th, 2015. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. We cover everything from movies and television to books, apps, and websites, and sometimes video games, which is really fun because we don't often get to talk about those. Joining me tonight is Alistair McFly. Welcome, sir.
Hi, welcome to that. Well, thank you.
Hey, I'm happy to have you back. It's always a good opportunity to talk about some nerdy stuff because you have this hub of nerddom going on over at ohmyzod.com.
I do indeed, yes.
And I've got a funny feeling that since the last time you were on the show, which I think was pre-Game of Thrones.
It was pre-Game of Thrones, yeah.
Yeah, it's been a while. Actually, you know what? I think the last time was a special post-show Avengers.
It was, yes. Yeah, I came on right at the end of it after some of the talk on Game of Thrones.
Because we had to go through all the spoilers. So this is always the fun part of my season, I guess you can call it, in the Citadel Cafe, because we spend so long, 10 weeks as a matter of fact, talking about Game of Thrones that we don't often get a chance to talk about anything else. As is the case last week when Brockett and I talked for like 2 hours about the finale. So now we get to kind of backtrack and, anything worth noting that you want to tell the listeners about?
Well, to be honest, I mean, the news has actually been quite slow, for the most part. I think for the last month, I've not really seen anything major that I've really wanted to post much about. There's certainly been some recent news. Today Lexus announced a new hoverboard prototype that they're working on.
No kidding.
Yeah. So it's, it works purely on magnets with a liquid nitrogen superconductor, and it works only on metallic and magnetic surfaces. As for how real this is and whether it can support the weight of a person, I've not been able to find anything like that.
Was that like that lock magnet that was at one of those trade shows like last year?
There's always a lot of variations on hoverboard technology, and it all revolves around magnets, you know. But realistically, what else could you use?
Yeah, no, of course.
Especially in something the size of a skateboard.
Yeah, I've seen a hoverboard. As a matter of fact, I think I've seen video of Tony Hawk on a hoverboard. Was it Kickstarter? I can't remember what company was making one, but the fact that they're doing it, it's cool, but they don't at all look very practical.
No, it's one of those things where it's nice that people are making the attempt. Mm-hmm. That to me is the big thing, that people have the interest to try and make this a real thing. But I know that we're definitely far off from that being an actual technology. There's also been things like Independence Day 2 got its title announced. It'll be called Independence Day Resurgence, which I personally think is actually quite a good title for it. You know, there's a lot of titles which have very similar names when it comes to sequels, but I think that Resurgence is quite a fitting one for a movie that's going to be about aliens coming back to kick our asses after we kind of kicked theirs last time. You know, so there's that. So there's been a few different things. And then sad news, obviously, the passing of James Horner, which was quite a big shock to everyone. He was always, he was a fantastic composer.
I agree. So some of really my favorite music. News. Yeah, some of my favorite music. And we lost Christopher Lee as well.
Yes,
that
indeed.
That was last week, I think.
It's kind of getting to that point where a lot of people who were very influential to us when we were kids growing up are now reaching that age when, you know, their time's expired.
Yeah.
And it's very sad, you know, just to see how many people have passed away. I mean, Star Wars is very lucky in the sense that when you look at series like Star Trek and Babylon 5, we find that a lot of those original cast members are all passing away. Mm-hmm. Star Wars is very lucky to have the entire core ensemble still with us.
Pretty much, yeah. The only Sir Alec Guinness is the only one that didn't that isn't around. I mean, and even if he was alive, he would be, what, 100 and something? Like he passed away, I feel like, at a normal age. You know, like, you know, maybe a little bit on the young side, but not at all. I mean, I guess one could make the argument that too soon is always too soon, but not a complete shock like James Horner, who died in a plane crash, and that was,
yes,
you know, it's very similar to the shocking loss of Robin Williams, who was very influential on a lot of people in our generation as well. And, you know, there's no loss is ever untragic, but I feel like the ones that come up, like plane crashes and car crashes and stuff like that, are a real kind of shock to the system. I remember feeling very sad when Leonard Nimoy passed away.
Oh, absolutely.
But also, I mean, it's terrible, but he lived a full life. You know, he worked almost right up until, you know, the year that he passed away. So I feel like it was not a life unfulfilled, you know, so sad, but you can still kind of like move on and know that, you know, that person probably wants the rest of the world to kind of like treasure their lives, not dwell on their passing, right?
And what a legacy for him to leave behind as well.
No, yeah, exactly. You know, like these people have, the works of art that have come out of people like Nimoy, Horner, you know, Williams. I mean, any of these people that we're naming, Christopher Lee. I mean, God, I can't even, I went to go look at his like IMDb page after he had passed on. The man's body of work is insane. Like, to the point where, you know, it's just astronomical. Like there's a lot of actors I find out there. Like there's big stars like Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt, and you know, a lot of these big, we'll call them like Hollywood kind of bankroll actors. Mm-hmm. Then there's other actors, like I want to say Liam Neeson fits this bill. I want to say Denzel Washington fits this bill. They're out there to work, and they are in an obscene amount of projects. Because they just love working, you know, like that's the impression I get. I'm hoping they don't hate it. Otherwise, wow, what a terrible life. But, you know, like I feel like Christopher Lee was one of those actors that he just, you know, do you have a job for me? Is it good? Is it something I'm interested in? Yes. Great. Let's do it. Like he wasn't holding out for $25 million a picture. You know what I mean? And that's something that the impression I certainly got from that. I don't want to say class of actor, but he does strike me as a very classy actor.
Yeah, and it is just strange, kind of when you're a kid, just kind of looking forward, and it doesn't even come into your mind that all these people that are just amazing will one day not be there. You know, all these kind of expectations you have of the future. I mean, talking of which, I recently fulfilled a childhood dream of mine. I recently bought myself a Roomba.
Oh, nice.
Yes, so I now, I was actually able to put my feet up on my sofa whilst a robot cleaned my house. You have no idea how excited the child in me was that day.
That's, you know, awesome. I've only ever seen one in action, but like 3 years ago. And they're pretty cool. Are they? I mean, you see, you watch it for a few minutes, but does it really clean the whole place?
I was surprised at how well it cleaned. My room isn't laid out easy for what you'd expect a robot to be able to handle. I've even got the charging base that it's supposed to return to hidden away in a little alcove under the kitchen bar. And it somehow still managed to find that. It found its way back. And I was amazed at how much it actually cleaned up. Like, the whole thing was just full of dirt. And I didn't even realize my apartment was that filthy.
Nice.
It was quite a shock. So yeah, just walking barefoot in the apartment, it's like, okay, yeah, this has definitely made a difference. So I'm just glad to be able to have a robot doing things for me, and especially when it's chores, which I don't really enjoy doing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have a carpet apartment. So there is the only two places in my entire apartment that don't have carpet are my kitchen and my bathroom. Everything else is the same gray, tight-knit, you know, apartment carpet that I've had forever. It does, you know, I get to the point where I walk around barefoot quite often, and I'm just like, ah, damn it, I have to vacuum again. And ultimately, it doesn't happen the moment that I realize it. It's like, it gets put on the to-do list, because I usually realize it at night, and I can't do anything about it at night, because I don't want to disturb my neighbors. So I have to find a point during the day when I remember, oh yes, I should vacuum. Often, it is right before either my mom comes over, or I've got company coming. And that's usually kind of what prompts me to make sure that that gets checked off the list. Because with the carpet that I have, you can't hide it. Any little, like, dirt is lighter than the carpet, so right. The color. So it just, it really, really shows up. So I stay on top of it.
Well, mine goes perfectly over wooden floor and then over my rug as well. My advice is just get yourself a Roomba, get it to schedule to do it, or just hit the button when you go out and it'll do it for you.
Nice.
So it's, robots of the future. I'm
absolutely
very excited.
So, Roomba is, of course, the type of device, but does your Roomba have a name?
Does my Roomba have a name?
Yeah.
It does indeed. I named it Scar.
Scar?
Yes. The one thing that it did manage to do wrong was it went under the radiator, and it had it appeared to be scratches as a result, because it was just at that height.
No.
So fortunately, it's just paint that had rubbed off. But it just looked like on his first outing, he managed to scar himself for life. And and also, there's something slightly Cylon-esque about the very front of it. So it was very fitting to be like Scar from Battlestar Galactica.
Mm, okay.
So I'm having trouble getting words out now. Yeah. And it seems more fitting for it to be kind of like the pet version of a Cylon, which is exactly what Scar was, as one of these Cylon raider ships.
Right.
So that's the name I've given it. So
very, very cool. I've always thought it would be neat to design like a custom top or a custom paint job for a Roomba. So instead of this very Cylon looking robot cleaning up your apartment, you know, like I would paint it up for, like, you know, make it look like a rattlesnake or a dragon, or like give it personality, eyes and a nose, and give it a front so that, you know, as it's turning around, it's funny, like once you put a face on something, it's very easy to personify it, you know.
Yes.
Make it a little bit anthropomorphic. So I think it'd be kind of fun.
I would advise against doing something like a Flash theme, like as amazing as the Flash is, just they don't go very fast.
And that would be kind of comical, actually.
Yeah, and I don't know if I mentioned this the first time I was on, but when I was a kid, I used to have a remote control car of Kit from Knight Rider.
Okay.
It was the most fantastic thing. You know, you make it go, the faster it goes, the brighter the light at the front is. It's fantastic. And one day at the end of term when I was at primary school, we were all allowed to bring in a toy. So I decided to bring Kit in. And there was another kid in school who brought this brand new, bear in mind that my Knight Rider one was like from the 80s. Mm. And this is the very early 90s. So it's already like 10 years old. And somebody brought in the very latest remote control car that his parents had just gotten. And he challenges me to a race. And I'm like, against Kit? Oh, you've got no chance. You know. I was sorely mistaken. That thing just zoomed off. And I was so disappointed. Like, how could a car like Kit from Knight Rider possibly lose a race? You know, the reality of TV shows not being fictional.
Yeah.
You know, was a very tough lesson for me that day.
Yeah. I would probably paint my Roomba up like Terminator. You know, give it maybe a little tuft of hair and have it look like, you know, the skin has been chipped away and have like one red eye. And then, you know, put your iPhone on the back of it with the Terminator theme song, you know. So the Roomba would be cleaning around going dun 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 dun. I think it'd be very funny.
A friend of mine wants me to do DJ Roomba, like from Parks and Rec. So I got my wireless Bluetooth speaker and just, it's got a suction cup on it, right on the back of it. Very easy.
That's amazing.
Sadly, the Roombas are quite loud. So
well, yeah. Yeah, I do remember that. Do remember that. Do you have any pets for it to terrorize, or are you pet-free?
Pet-free.
Ah, yeah. Well, that probably makes it a lot easier on the Roomba, too. Less fur to clean up and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you do see a lot of videos on the internet of cats riding them, so
yeah.
Well, I suppose they're fun for cats.
Yeah. One of the things that we missed, I guess, in technology on the Citadel Cafe because we spent so much time talking about the Game of Thrones finale last week was all of E3.
Yes. And, I mean, this is why I feel like news has been so slow as well, is because there's been so much news for E3. Mm-hmm. I think some students are holding off for Comic-Con as well.
Yeah, yeah.
But E3's been like the big focus recently.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I've been catching up, though. I've got my friend Patrick teamed up with my other friend Scott, and they do they each do separate video game shows. Scott does Boop on a regular basis, B-O-O-P. French Spin.com is where you can find Pixels, which is Patrick's video game podcast. They're both kind of general news catch-all shows. They don't really focus on any one particular game. But what they did was, because they're buddies, they teamed up and they did a special Pixels where you can listen to the two of them do like a E3 recap. And it's been great because I didn't have time to watch the, I don't know what, 15 hours of press releases and stuff that they were doing at E3 for all the different cool things that I don't have time to play anyway. I just kind of like seeing what's happening in video games. So I really highly recommend checking out Pixels. I don't remember the episode number right now, but if you download it, it's the most recent one from last Wednesday, I think, or this Monday. And it'll say right on it, it's the E3 episode. But check out Pixels and listen to Patrick and Scott kind of summarize what has been going on. And I've been watching, and there's a lot of sequels, a lot of franchises that I'm not really invested in. I did, however, like the trailer for Horizon Zero Dawn. You can look this up on YouTube. Just look up Horizon E3 and you'll find it. And it was a very cool concept and had a really cool... I guess, female main character that they show off in the trailer. The idea is that it's a post-apocalyptic world. The female character is giving kind of a monologue kind of over everything that you're watching. And you're seeing a world that's been overrun by vegetation. So we are gone, and plants and animals and stuff have kind of re-inhabited all the cities and all the different places of the world. Skyscrapers are covered in vines and trees, and there's waterfalls kind of cascading down through broken windows and things. So post-apocalyptic, but not in the Mad Max way. It's very green. And then they keep on calling us the old ones as the new people of the planet are going around and doing their thing. And there seem to be tribes involved as well as warriors. And the main character, who I don't know her name, it's really cool that it's a woman, though, because, and to their credit, she's dressed like she should be, you know, like she's not scantily clad. She's got a bow and arrow. It's a tech bow and arrow, but she's got a bow and arrow, and she's going around and she's harvesting robot animals because technology has survived this kind of apocalypse. And there's these little kind of like dinosaur-like robots, but they don't really have heads like dinosaurs. They've got heads like, GLaDOS from Portal. And so she has to, one spots her and she has to take it out before it notifies the herd. So like these robots are acting like animals and they all look very dinosaur like. And what she ends up doing is finding these herbivore robots that are look like they're harvesting plant life and turning it into some sort of energy pack that's on their back. So she's taking out these herd animals, robots, and harvesting the energy. So this is what she has to do for whatever, you know, her mission is. And in the process, one of the guard robots, which is the size of a T-Rex, spots her and attacks her. And it's got a completely different design to it. It looks like a very cool, very unique game compared to what I was seeing a lot of, which is like, you know, GTA and, or not GTA, Gran Turismo or some other racing game, and there's, you know, all the EA sport games. Like nothing really kind of grabbed me as, whoa, this is amazing and new and cool, with the exception of this game. And I thought that it would be worth mentioning on the show just because it's nice to see new IPs coming out that look like, I think Polygon maybe called it a game that's aiming to fill the gap between GTA and Skyrim.
Right,
and it,
okay.
Yeah, and it has a kind of Skyrim look to it. I mean, it's all the whole thing was like captured on next-gen consoles, so it looks amazing. I mean, it's almost cinematic quality, but it's the video game, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm excited. I'm looking forward to seeing more about it. And I mean, the next chance I get to sit down and look up some concept art, I'm definitely going to be finding out what this like what went into this game's development if I can, because it looks beautiful.
And when it comes to like pre-existing IP, I think the one that really surprised me, and I've already put a pre-order in for it, was Star Wars Battlefront.
Oh yeah!
Like the fact that they went to the Lucas Ranch place, whatever it's called, and they went to the archives and they got all the original sound effects. They got the models of the that were used for all the. The stop motion animation, mm-hmm. Scan those in, which means it's as accurate as it's ever going to be. And the video that they showed was phenomenal for that.
Yeah.
It was absolutely wonderful. And I'm more of a Star Trek guy than Star Wars, always have been growing up. And I remember halfway through the 5-minute trailer that they have, just thinking, why can't they make Star Trek games like this? And it was at that point where it's just like, yeah, I'm totally buying this when it comes out.
Yeah, I remember playing Star Wars Battlefront. I think it was for the N64, maybe. If it wasn't Battlefront, it was something very similar. Mm. And it was like a split screen experience where my buddy Chad and I would go at one another in different vehicles, like a walker or a tank or something. It could have been in a completely different game. I might be remembering it wrong.
No, I know which one you mean. I had it for the GameCube, and it was I think it was around that kind of era.
Maybe it was a GameCube. I know. I'm not even sure if it was Chad's console. I think it might have been his younger brother's, but then he bought the game or bought it for him, and then we ended up playing when he was at school because we were on like we'd be kind of university age and on summer vacation.
But what was good about that was that you went from third person on foot to third person in a fighter, and it was seamless.
Yes.
You'd be in space, and then you'd be in the enemy ship going and infiltrating inside there, and it was completely seamless all the way through, which was fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. And this looked pretty good, too. I mean, there was an experience of what it would be like to be in an AT-AT. Sign me up. That sounds
I've
like a blast.
I've never wanted to be surrounded by ice so much in my life.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you had your chance earlier this winter in Halifax, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that... choosing the Battle of Hoth to show off the game. Why am I blanking on? It's Battlefront. To show off Battlefront was perfect. I mean, everybody that is their target audience was just like, yes, sign me up now. Like, if it had been like the Gungan front, or if it had been some weird made up place, you know, it just wouldn't have been the same. So.
And the other thing is, of course, that they're using people on foot. You've got people in vehicles. You've got ships flying around. So it showcases everything as well in one place, which was brilliant.
And the sound was perfect. You know, like I can only imagine the excitement / terror of being a rebel soldier, you know, going along the ground and doing your job. And then you hear a TIE fighter scream overhead and you've got to duck for cover as they come in like green lasers blasting like, yes, sign me up.
Yeah, but it is basically just going to be Halifax at winter, but with weapons.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
which will be fantastic. And talking of Halifax, just complete sidestep. You know, it's interesting being on the Citadel Cafe today because I actually went to the Citadel today.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I went to Citadel Hill and I had a tour and got to see all the barracks and everything that they have there. So that was pretty cool.
Was that your first time?
Side thing.
Was it
decided
your, was
to do
your
the touristy thing? For,
yeah, was it your
for
first
change.
Time going through the tour?
Hmm?
Was it your first time going to the hill?
It was, yes. Yeah, it was one of those things I always wanted to do and just never got around to it. And
right on.
Got up this morning, it's just like, you know what? I'm going to do something touristy today. Yeah. Sun's out. It's nice. No snow. I'll go.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't been there in years, but it's an interesting spot. They do a pretty good job of kind of filling you in. And yeah, I mean, it's a modern city now, but like you forget that Halifax started off as a port city. And there's a lot of places around where you can still go and see the cannons that used to be mounted, like at Citadel Hill, Fox Point, out at the end of the harbor. I mean, there are some monster guns out there that were meant to defend, you know, the harbor and the ships. And it started off as a military outpost.
And what was very strange for me was going into a museum reading all this history about a country that is not my own, but shares so much origin with Great Britain.
Yep.
That was kind of a weird thing, because it's like I'm learning about my country's history, but I'm not. But yeah. I am learning also the history of the country I'm living in. It's a very peculiar thing for an Englishman, I must say.
Yeah. Well, I will. Nova Scotia, New Scotland, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So did you get a chance to check out anything from E3 about the Batman Arkham Knight?
I didn't. But to be honest, that's something where I tried to avoid as much as I could.
Okay.
In terms of that. It just got released yesterday.
Oh, it's out now.
And yeah, I've tried to avoid as much as I can. I like the first two, and I ended up picking it up. It was just on a whim, kind of going in, not even realizing it was actually yesterday it was getting released. And I just saw it had just been released. I was like, I'll take that. And I had a little bit of a go. Obviously, it's brand new, so I don't want to spoil anything for anybody.
Sure, of course.
But there were just so many moments, even just in the first evening of playing it, when I was just like, oh, wow. No way.
Yeah, I had a feeling they're going to do that with this title.
Yeah, I find that the tech is just over the top. For things like the Batmobile, like in the movies, it's grounded in something which you can kind of take as that would actually exist for real.
Right.
Whereas it's way over the top. It's very much kind of like everything moves like Transformers or Iron Man.
Yeah, yeah. I got the feeling too. There was a trailer that they talked about, or an interview, I guess, in E3, where they were talking about how the Batmobile is kind of like the design motif for the whole game. So Batman's suit reflects the Batmobile and vice versa. It's almost like they're one and the same. They're so tied together, because in other games, like you're obviously gliding around, and the other one you could use your the Batwing to get from location to location. But the idea in this particular title was to use the Batmobile and want to use the Batmobile as your main mode of tearing around Gotham.
And that's it. And not only are you kind of going around and stuff, there'll be times when you're in a position where you're stuck and you can remotely control the Batmobile to do stuff.
Nice.
So it works. It seems like one of those gimmicks which could easily fail, but and at first I was a little unsure. The controls, I do find the controls, I'm using an Xbox One.
Okay.
I found the controls were a little bit weird, because you've got the right trigger for accelerate, but the left trigger is not decelerate or brake.
Oh.
And that to me was very weird. I can kind of understand why they've gone with the scheme that they have. I haven't checked to see if I can remap stuff or not, but
yeah.
But after a while, I've kind of gotten used to it, and it's working as a thing with the whole Batmobile element to it.
Yeah, as I've played the other three titles, and with every new one, there was always a little bit of, not buyer's remorse, but there was this chunk of time where you really have to get used to them reinventing the control scheme. Now, the fighting and stuff in the game never really changed that much. It was more the timing, and then the combination of buttons and the way that the camera, I think, was working were the main changes, and they were all for the better. But it's just that they're such good games, you play the hell out of them, and then they go and change things on you, and your muscle memory is all messed up, right? And so for the first few minutes, not only, I mean, you're frustrated because you suck. Like you are getting combos wrong. You're getting punched when you don't want to get punched, and you're dying to like three guys when you know that you can take on eight. And like just that kind of stuff was always frustrating to me. And I remember really having a hard time with the switch from Arkham Asylum to Arkham City. I found that was the biggest jump. Now City to Origins was not as steep, but I found that some of the more satisfying stuff in Origins was that you were meaner as Batman. And I mean, without spoiling anything, are you a mean dude in this game? Like I was kicking people's kneecaps in and doing some damage to some bad criminals, and it felt good.
Yeah, there's one point where I'd probably say somewhere between 20 and 30 guys right near the beginning of the game, and you're like, I'm supposed to take on this many people this early on. But it works, and not only are you beating the hell out of them, there's a new combination that lets you use stuff around you. So you may be swinging off a light, and then snapping it so the whole lamp thing just crashes and right down onto people below, picking things up and whacking them with it, you know, and he basically just uses the environment, and that works quite well.
Nice. Yeah, I really enjoyed, as I got on in Arkham Origins, I remember going into doing some of the different training and even unlocking some of the other characters. Like at some point in the challenge mode, like you can fight as Deathstroke, and it gives you a whole bunch of different moves and different combinations you can do as you hit people with your metal staff, which makes a god awful noise when you hit them. It just sounds just really painful. But it's something really satisfying about being able to walk into a group of like 20 guys and you're just like, I don't know, every other game I play, like this is a bad idea. But then the game quickly reminds you, you're Batman. It's all good.
Deathstroke's one of those characters I'm not that familiar with. And if I recall, it's that's the character Will Smith's playing in Suicide Squad.
Yeah, and he was also in, not this season, but last season of Arrow.
Yes, yes. Yeah. The thing that surprised me most when they were showing pictures from Suicide Squad was this one photo where Will Smith, completely bald, full beard.
I think
he's playing, he looks like Uncle Phil.
Yeah, he's playing Deadshot.
Deadshot. Ah.
Yeah, not Deathstroke. Yeah, okay. Deadshot. Yeah, I knew something was not sitting with me right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's dead.
In both cases, I'm not familiar that much with either of those characters.
No. The most I know about Deadshot is actually from Arkham City, because Deadshot was one of the villains you had to stop.
Right. I'm just kind of, as soon as I find out that there's a movie coming out now with a certain character, and it's a character that I'm not familiar with, I don't want to know anything. If there's a character I find out about and there isn't anything upcoming with them, then I actually am interested to find out more.
Mm.
But I kind of don't want to be spoiled or to have expectations ruined. So I just find it's more interesting to see how they evolve in the movie and then afterwards find out that information.
Well, yeah. I mean, I've got a funny feeling with the upcoming release of Ant-Man. I am probably going to enjoy that film.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say that I would really go back and read the comics. Like I've got a funny feeling that Ant-Man is one of those slightly hokier characters. You know, it may not be the mainstream superhero that most people come to know and appreciate in things like Thor and Iron Man and you know, Captain America, Superman, Batman. and I feel like it's probably going to be better served in a film that has been written and produced to maybe appeal a little bit more to the general public, so that it's going to have a little bit more of that mass appeal, and it's probably good in that way.
Yeah, and they're very self-aware with it from the looks of the trailer, where there's a mention of him saying that he's Ant-Man, and he's like, "Look, I didn't come up with it."
yeah, I think that it's so frustrating too, because I've done that before, where I see a character in a comic book, or I see them on like DeviantArt or Tumblr or something, and I go, "Huh, that looks like an established character. It has enough likes and retweets or whatever that it's obviously a popular character. I wonder who that is." Or they'll name them, and then I'll look them up. And you go through and realize like the code name for the character or whatever, and you're like, that is the dumbest name for what is a really cool aesthetic to a superhero or a supervillain. It's like, why are they called like the Belch? Like, that is just dumb, you know? And it's just because ultimately, eventually, like, I mean, I imagine they probably have started to run out of cool names. Like, there's probably very little going on that. And I think one of the best franchises that handles it well is X-Men. Because if they have a dumb code name, at least they end up being known for their real name.
Yes.
You know, like it'll be, you know, Scott, as opposed to if people didn't like Cyclops, like if Cyclops didn't stick, then they would just call him Scott. You know, and I think it's a good way to kind of balance the bad, or I won't say bad, the hokey naming that can sometimes happen in comics.
Mm. Yeah. There's also, there's a movie back in 99, Mystery Men, if you recall, with Ben Stiller, Hank Azaria, and so on.
Yep.
And like you'd have Mr. Furious, you know, and his whole thing is that he just gets angry.
Yeah.
That's his superpower. And then Invisible Boy, played by Kel from Kenan and Kel, where he goes invisible as long as nobody's looking at him. It's Yeah. It's just this really weird comedy, which could only have come out at that time.
Yeah.
But yeah, like some of the names that they have, and more so the powers are just ridiculous.
Yeah.
For it.
Yeah.
But yeah. I mean, it's always stuck with me, this idea, this guy who can go invisible as long as nobody's watching.
Yeah. What was the name of the movie that had Hit Girl in it?
Kick-Ass.
Yeah. That was the last kind of off-color superhero movie that I watched was Kick-Ass. Mm. I enjoyed it too, by the way. I thought it was
yes,
good.
Yes, and it sounds like they're not going to get around to ever doing the third one.
I don't know if I remember that there was a second one.
Yeah, there's been two movies, and in terms of graphic novels, there's been three. It is a trilogy.
Oh, interesting. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, the sequel is a very different movie, but that's also a good thing.
Mm.
But it does follow a lot from what's on the in the graphic novel, apparently, from what I've heard. I've not read it myself, but one thing that took me a while to realize was that there's this big army dude, and it took me a while to figure out that that's Jim Carrey.
Really?
Yeah, he plays this character completely unlike anything. It's one of those, once you see him, you know it's Jim Carrey, but my God, he looks and acts so differently.
Interesting.
And his voice is so different. You just...
Yeah, well,
I was kind of shocked that I didn't notice straight away.
He's got a very unique look to him, but he has a chameleon for a voice. Like, I find that he's... If you're just listening to him speak, I find he's very hard to kind of pick out. It's only sometimes when you get a little bit more natural acting out of him. Like if you're watching a cartoon and he's doing voice acting, I don't always pick it out right away. But once I get that little hint, it's like, oh, okay, I totally get that. Cause I've heard him do either a line that he's done before or the animators have grabbed a mannerism from the tape, you know, of him doing the voice, and they've put it into the movie, and you're like, oh, okay, yeah, all right, maybe that is Jim Carrey. But speaking of animation, have you seen anything recently that's worth mentioning?
Oh, yeah, I went to see Inside Out, Pixar's new movie.
So jealous. I can't wait to see this.
Not only did I go to see it, I saw it before it was released, a special preview screening that they were running.
Oh, nice.
So before the film, there was a tour of Pixar's headquarters.
No way.
Yeah, so you had the director and so on just taking you through the Steve Jobs building and taking you on a massive tour. And they showed you stuff that's in the works because, of course, we've had a bit of a break where there hasn't been any Pixar movies. Apparently there were some delays. So this year we get not only Inside Out, but we're also getting The Good Dinosaur.
I thought there was two coming out this year.
Yes, which is really weird, but great, because yeah. I'm a massive Pixar fan.
What was the last Pixar movie? It wasn't Brave.
Yeah,
you're right. I think it is.
It was Brave.
From 2 years ago.
Yeah. Last year was a complete no-show for Pixar.
Yeah. Oh, you know what it was? Everybody was so nutso over Frozen.
Mm.
That you just, I mean, I know it's a Disney Animation Studios. I mean, they're all under the same umbrella, but different studio houses. And that probably made everybody feel like there was a Pixar film.
Yeah. And it was kind of almost at Pixar's quality in that regard.
I would say that would be, I'm probably mistaken as a Pixar film a lot of the time.
Mm.
You know, if I was to have it a guess.
And Disney made Planes, which is set in the Cars universe, just a little bit before that.
Oh.
Which also added, even though that wasn't Pixar involved, it was just Disney using kind of a rough license to it.
Yeah. Pixar didn't come up with a sequel last year, did they?
Hmm?
They didn't come up with a sequel.
For
anything. I'm curious now.
So they were showing The Good Dinosaur. They were actually, you went into the Steve Jobs Theater and got to see them working on a scene, which is really good.
Mm-hmm.
They were also talking because they're doing Finding Dory. There's another one that's in the works.
Hmm.
There's also Toy Story 4. And they went to the storyboard room and John Lasseter was there wearing the most amazing Inside Out Hawaiian shirt.
Nice.
Because he's absolutely massive when it comes to Hawaiian shirts. And he wouldn't allow you to go in and see what they were working on because they're still working on the story for Toy Story 4.
Hmm.
But again, that's fantastic that they're doing that.
Yeah.
I have a lot of faith that if John Lasseter is wanting to do a fourth one, even though obviously it's another one, that he must have a very good reason for doing it.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I need Toy Story 4. It's set to release in June of 2017, and I stand corrected. Between Brave and Inside Out, Monsters University came out in 2013. Brave was actually 2012.
That's right.
Yeah.
Why did I think that Monsters Inc. came out? Monsters University came out before that.
Yeah. See, I saw Monsters University. I rented it, so I didn't see it in theaters. So that's probably why I thought that Brave would have been the last theaters showing that I saw a Pixar movie in.
I'm yet to see one that I haven't seen at the theater first.
Yeah. No, normally I'm right in there, but Monsters University, which was a good film, I don't think I really needed to see it in the theater.
Hmm.
Yeah.
The other thing is that there's another movie that they're working on, and they kind of skim past some storyboards, but they were like, you can't see that, we're not able to show you this yet. But yeah, so there's something that they're working on that they haven't announced yet.
Interesting.
And another thing was they went through and they showed all of the different offices, and Lasseter has shown his office before in other behind-the-scenes tours. But one of the interesting things I found was that he's always got everything that he loves in there. So it is full of toys because he's obsessed with toys, hence the reason why they did Toy Story.
Mm-hmm.
He's a huge fan of cars, so it's filled with cars and all this other stuff. So it's just a shrine of everything that he loves. And the one other thing where there is a lot of them are model trains. So I'm wondering if... given that that's everything that he's interested in and loves, and there's all these trains in there, if within the next decade, we may see a movie that has a predominant focus on trains of some sort.
Yeah, I don't know if I need cars, but trains, you know?
Yeah. Well, this is the thing. I don't necessarily mean that it would be done in the style of Cars.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of trains in there. It almost felt like half of the room was filled with trains.
Wow.
So I wouldn't be surprised if at some point that's going to have an influence on a movie. And I would say, given how long it takes for them to make them and the number that they make, we're probably, it may be within the decade, but that's just a me thinking.
Yeah. Kind of, yeah. I'm on a Wikipedia page right now.
Stuff. But if it turns out to be true, I'm just going to say right here, that was me.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm looking at three unannounced Pixar films in November and June of 2017 and 18, and then another one that doesn't even have a date attached to it. So you could say they're probably going to come out in the next few years. I think that if they did something about trains, or in particular model trains, I think that it would be very cool if it was something along the lines of like Ratatouille. You know, like you've got a character that is like a foodie, you know, and a chef, and is just passionate about this one thing. If it was a story about a family or a character or an individual or somebody that was like obsessed with trains, that I think would be a better way to go.
And that's kind of the lines I'm meaning, as opposed to Cars, where the trains are actually alive. You know, I think it'd be more, as you say, just somebody with a huge passion for them, you know, or something that just takes place on a railway line, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But Inside Out itself was an incredible movie. It's a film about all these different emotions that are inside this child's head, and you kind of follow this child from birth to being a child. And the way that they capture everything is pure Pixar. The animation is gorgeous. The concepts behind it are just fantastic. You know, the fact that you've got joy and sadness and anger, and the fact that they're all working together. And one of the things that I find is amazing about Pixar is that there's so many movies which are aimed at families and kids, where the story is, if you wish hard enough, then you can do anything you wish. Anything's achievable. With Pixar, it's slightly different. It's, you may fail, but that's okay.
Mm.
And that's absolutely the story behind Inside Out, and it's just so heartwarming. And And obviously, for it being a movie about emotions, it's a very emotive film as well. I've only cried at a handful. I've cried at E.T. I've cried at the end of Toy Story 3 and at the very beginning of Up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and every time it's like, damn you, Pixar. Mm-hmm. they got me on three occasions in this film.
Wow.
Yeah. And I cannot recommend it enough. It's absolutely brilliant. Afterwards, they did a Q&A as well. They had, it was a live satellite feed. They didn't get the video portion for us working, but we still got to hear some of the stuff behind it, some of the ideas and concepts that they were kicking around whilst trying to make it and so on. And they were taking questions from Twitter and stuff. So that was pretty cool.
Wow.
And a friend of mine from London, who I used to work with, a guy called Daniele, he was saying that he'd heard that the people working at Pixar on Inside Out, they were probably the, you know, of all the films that they've made, Inside Out was the one they were most proud of.
Wow.
You know, and when you watch it, you do genuinely get a sense of that.
Mm.
You know, there's definitely a lot of passion behind the making of that movie.
And see, something that's appealing to me about Inside Out right out of the gate is just the uniqueness of even just the pitch. Like when someone explains what you're going to be watching, you know, and Pixar always surprises me and stuff like this.
Mm.
These are the kind of movies that are possible because Pixar is doing Toy Story 3 and 4, you know, like they did Cars 2. And, you know, now that Pixar has a huge, you know, kind of swath of films out there, you can pick out the diamonds in the rough and you can pick out the ones that are still good, but just are not really wowing people, but they're still making a lot of money for Pixar and Disney. Especially with like merchandising, like the merchandising around Toy Story and Cars is just insane.
Yes.
But the fact that these movies are so expensive to make and that they have the means to create movies like Inside Out, I think is one of the only things that I can forgive about like all these sequels. And it's not just Pixar. I'm talking about like any Hollywood studio in general, you know, it's, you know, unless you're dealing with something that has more money than anybody like Disney Lucasfilm to make Star Wars. Like no other thing is funding Star Wars other than Star Wars. Like that's a giant unto itself. But I'm struggling to find, you know, like a movie that would be, I don't know. Well, for example, the DC movies are struggling to become as popular as and accessible as the Marvel films because they don't have, like they're trying to conform as opposed to just doing their own thing, right?
Yeah.
And they have to because they're expensive and they have to make their money back, you know, so they have to kind of just not dumb it down, but they have to kind of make it accessible or what the executives think is accessible or appealing.
Especially for executives who have no interest or experience in the source material.
Right, right. But like, that's what I'm saying. If more movies like The Hangover 4.5 would make a studio enough money that they could then do what they want and take a risk on a good Superman or Batman or Wonder Woman movie, I'd be more accepting of like these endless sequels than I normally am. But I feel part of it is just because I'm an artist and, you know, I'm a character designer and I feel like if they have, I wouldn't say the privilege because they've worked really hard to get where they are, but if they have the opportunity to make new original content with as many artists as I know are out there and potentially even just the number of artists that are having original ideas at Pixar, I mean, why isn't every movie a unique IP? You know, like that's the artist in me. Like I understand how the business works. I know that you have to, you know, make money to make new art. Like I get it. But just for the artist side of the argument, like I'm always disappointed when I see stuff like Toy Story 4 on the docket. Like I don't care. What I do care about is Inside Out or, what was the name of the dinosaur one? The Good Dinosaur.
The Good Dinosaur.
Like that trailer killed me.
Yes.
I thought that was hilarious. You know, when the asteroid goes by the Earth and they kind of go, oh, and then they go back to whatever they were doing. Like,
I think when it comes to Pixar, they are slightly different though. They do have a very intense sense of direction and quality, and they, you know, they won't do something unless they feel it's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
They, you know, when they did Monsters University, I don't think it was a, oh, let's just do another Monsters, Inc. film. You know, I think that they generally were wanting more with the characters that they developed and loved, and they wanted to explore more of that. And obviously the right way to do it, because their story was told. It had an end. And that was it. But I think there was always that concept of what were they like beforehand? And so I think that they want to explore stuff that way. I think Toy Story 4 isn't happening because they want to do another Toy Story film for the sake of doing it. I think that there must be something where they just feel we still haven't addressed that.
Yeah.
Or perhaps enough time's gone that they want to see what the toys would be like after all this time.
Yeah.
You know, what happens to a toy after that length of time has passed. You know?
I feel like they can still come up with a good story for Toy Story 4, but I also feel like I'd love to be a fly in the wall and find out what kind of pressure it's coming on from Disney about, you know, making another film because they've got the numbers. You know, like at some point there's somebody that's got no artistic interest other than just numbers. You know, that's not calling shots, but at least pushing for that kind of stuff. And I mean, the other thing too is that you've got John Lasseter is in charge of the whole shebang. Since he's in charge of feature films at, you know, at Disney, and I, you know, you definitely see his influence in the, you know, in the coming movies, you know, from Pixar and from Disney for that matter. And I will be the first to admit that I was surprised by the original Cars. Like, I mean, I get that it's Doc Hollywood in a cartoon form, but I did not go into that thinking this is going to be something I enjoy. I remember I borrowed it from Hayden. He lent me the DVD and I thoroughly enjoyed it. Having again skipped it in theaters because it just didn't really want to go see it. And I was wrong on that. So, you know, I don't think I'm pretty sure I have not seen Cars 2. I've also heard from other animators that I respect that say, like, well, you're not really missing it. I mean, sure, watch it if you got it, but like, don't rush out to the theaters and see it back, you know, in 2011 when it was out. Like, I didn't get the reports. Like, I'm like, what I'm hearing now, but inside out is like, don't walk, run, you know, to go see this film and be a part of the experience that everybody else is taking in. So it's definitely high on my list. I do want to see Jurassic World as well. I've not heard amazing things, but I've heard it's still worth checking out.
I liked it. I would say without trying to oversell it, no movie is going to be as no Jurassic Park movie is ever going to be as good as the original.
Yeah. Well, it's like, you know, it's
that
like everybody
was
that's
the right time. There was the right amount of magic behind it. But it is Jurassic World is by far better than any of the other sequels.
Yeah. And that's what I'm hearing too, is like, you know, it's not going to take your breath away, but it's also, if you're a Jurassic Park fan, it's going to be really cool. It's, you know, it's very similar to, I'm trying to think of a good movie. Well, you know, like the first Star Wars wowed people, you know, and then the other Star Wars, they were good, but they didn't really knock anybody's socks off.
And this is the thing as well. There's a bit of a meta kind of thing in Jurassic World where the park has been open for a while. And of course, this is what everybody wanted, was to be able to see the park in action. And there's a whole section about how people are bored. All the visitors going to the park aren't wowed by dinosaurs anymore. They might as well just be going to a farm and seeing a cow.
Right.
You know, and it's just the fact that nobody's wowed. And that's very much how it is in movies. Just think about how amazing it was seeing those dinosaurs for the first time. And this is why people won't find anything better than the original Jurassic Park, because they remember the wow factor they had back then. Mm-hmm. You look at it now with all the CG, doesn't matter how good the quality gets, people just aren't wowed by that spectacle anymore.
Yeah.
And so there is something slightly meta in the message that they're sort of putting there, but it is very hard to throw effects at a movie and create a magical world that still shocks and awes people at the same time.
Yeah, I'm trying to think about the last movie I saw where the visual effects really blew me away. Like, in a way that's like, wow, that's a really cool visual effect, in a way that it just really immersed me and I stopped thinking about it. I know it. I've seen something recently that I really loved. It wasn't The Hobbit, because I found I mean, as cool as those movies are, Lord of the Rings and all that kind of stuff, you do feel very bombarded by a lot of visuals when you're watching those.
Tell you, one film that did surprise me visually was Tomorrowland.
I haven't seen it.
That's one of those walk, don't run kind of movies, I would say. It's a very interesting visual concept. You kind of watch it and you're not wowed by like, wow, it's amazing what I'm seeing. But the concept and thought behind the design is actually quite nice.
Mm. Yeah, I'm struggling to remember. I feel like there was one movie that I went that I was just really blown away by it, but I'm drawing a blank. But whatever. For me, this week I've been catching up on some TV series that I haven't had a chance to watch because of all my Game of Thrones, endeavors. And surprisingly, there's no sci-fi or fantasy in the list. Yeah, it's really bizarre. I had a friend, Mike O'Day, who has been on the show a number of times, recommend a guilty pleasure of his, Nashville, is on Netflix. It's an ABC show currently going into season 4, I think. This fall. And I thought there was more actually. Someone had told me that there was like 5 or 6 seasons on Netflix. I was like, oh gosh, I don't have time for that. Like, I don't want to get sucked into something that I'm going to be wanting to watch that much of. But, there's only 3 seasons on Netflix. So all of them, which is cool. So you can get up to date up to the end of the season, which is cool if you want to. Which I haven't yet cause that's a lot. However, I really like it. It's one of those kind of like guilty TV dramas that's got more drama happening than anybody ever experiences in their real life. However, something that will blow your mind is how talented all of the actors are on this show.
Are they known actors?
Yeah, they are. Connie Britton, who I will watch in anything, is in it. I watched her on Spin City. I saw her on Friday Night Lights. She played the mom on Friday Night Lights. I'm not sure if you know that.
Who did she play in Spin City?
Spin City, she was Michael J. Fox's personal assistant.
Oh, right.
She's really attractive. if that makes any difference in remembering her. And still is. I'm not sure how old Connie Britton is, but she looks fantastic. And she has a very cool presence in this show. There's a lot of, I mean, everybody does their own singing. Connie Britton, Claire Bowen, I don't remember any of the gentlemen's actors' names, but they're all very, very talented. I will now watch or listen to Claire Bowen in anything. She is ridiculously talented. And then you go and listen to her in an interview and you realize she's not from the South. She's not from Mississippi. She's from Australia. So she's not only is she putting on a fake Southern American accent, but she's then singing in the same kind of country accent style. Like just,
oh, wow.
Yeah, she's very, very talented. And apparently she's got an album coming out, like a solo album of her own coming out later on this year. So I'd imagine that most, if not all of the actors that were chosen for Nashville were musicians first and actors second, or had both skills kind of coming into their careers. Worth watching. It's a primetime drama. So there's just a lot of cliffhangery stuff and a lot of like, he said, she said, he dates her and then she dates him. And like, so there's a lot of that. The difference is that for the most part, everybody's in their 20s or 30s or later. The youngest, I guess, real mainstream character in the show is 15 or 16. And it's the girl that plays Connie Britton's daughter, but that's it. Everybody else is kind of an adult. So I've never really been able to get into other dramas since I've been, you know, long out of high school. Like when I was a kid, I watched Dawson's Creek and Party of Five and all those. But this one is more adult focused, I find.
Right.
And it's focused on the music too. And I'm not a big country music guy, but it's good music. Like it's well-written stuff, which I really like. And speaking of well-written, the other series that I've kind of poking a stick at because my friend Laura recommended it, is Suits.
Is that the one about the two lawyers?
Yeah, it is.
I saw trailers for that, but I never actually got around to watching it when it came out.
It's really good, and it's getting to the point now where there's some of these characters that are dating, and I'm kind of like, no, don't do it. Don't do it. I like the fast talk and law speak and the fact that it's like take no prisoners, you know, rough up the feathers of the other guy. I don't want any tears or drama or anything like that. Like, I want the hard hitting. It was like, it feels, not to sound awful, but it feels very masculine. It's an aggressive show. I shouldn't say masculine. It's an aggressive show.
Is it going
show.
The way of Numbers?
Ooh, I don't remember that show.
Numbers was about an FBI detective, and his brother was a complete maths genius and would use maths to to figure out all these crimes. And season one was all about the crimes and the maths. And then after that, it got into the relationships and so on. And it kind of went away from the core of it that was the most compelling part.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's what they're doing here, is that there is the core of it, and there is a very smart character, and it's no secret. In the first episode, you find out that this guy, Mike, doesn't have a law degree, but he's practicing law. So
they even show that in the trailer.
Yeah. So that's the whole premise, is that this big shot lawyer has hired a guy that doesn't have a law degree, but is smart enough to be a lawyer and is a damn good one. So it's them trying to keep their secret and kind of go throughout their day. And Gina Torres is in it. She plays one of the main kind of boss characters from Firefly. Sure. And I'll watch her in anything. She's a very, very talented actor. She has a great presence. I'm gonna butcher his name. Gabriel, I want to say Mott, M-A-C-H-T, or Mock. I'm not sure how to pronounce his last name. But this
Gabriel
guy.
Gabriel M.
M, sure. So Gabriel M is one charismatic son of a bitch. Now, I realize that he's playing a character, but man, it is really, really fun to watch. And if you've watched Mad Men, and you've seen any good movie with George Clooney in it, then it's like John Hamm and George Clooney have a kid brother. He looks a little like Clooney. But he's got the swagger that John Hamm brings to the early seasons of Mad Men. And you like him only because he says all the things that you wish you could, right? He's not a likable guy, but he's kind of that bull in a china shop, sort of has everything he wants at his fingertips kind of guy. He's the James Bond of the law firm, essentially, right?
What?
Yeah. Actually, speaking of, he would be an excellent choice for a new James Bond, if anybody out there, you know, has any say. He would make a very, very good James Bond.
There's a lot of people speculating on the next one as well. So it is as though what's-his-name's time's just about up as well.
Oh, yeah? Yeah. Well, I imagine that you don't want to get too typecast as an actor either, you know? I don't imagine that Henry Cavill will make endless Superman movies. He'll probably make three, you know, and that'll be it. I'm not sure if his contract is for more, but I imagine they've got him for three. And after that, he has to make
unless he does a Hugh Jackman out of it.
Well, yeah, you know, the thing is, like, yeah, and Cavill is talented enough to not, you know, to break out and do other things. Because I've seen Jackman in other roles, and he does not, you don't think Wolverine when you see him, you know? But then again, I think that the other roles that he has are also very different from what he does in all the X-Men and Wolverine movies. But one of my favorite things about Suits, aside from the writing, which is stellar, the relationship between Harvey, which is Gabriel M's character, and Donna, his personal assistant, his secretary, who's played by Sarah Rafferty. It reminds me a lot of the on-screen chemistry between another Donna Moss, who was played by Janelle Maloney, and Josh Lyman, played by Bradley Whitford, on The West Wing. So if you watch The West Wing and you enjoyed like the Donna-Josh kind of dynamic, the Harvey-Donna dynamic is hilarious. It's one of those shows where you really have to listen to everything that they say, including when they're leaving a room and they're mumbling, because it's like they're the best one-liners in the whole show. She's Donna plays this very strong-willed, very take-no-shit-from-anybody, manipulative, but in a very playful way. Like, she's not mean, but she'll definitely let you know where she stands and where you stand, where you shouldn't be standing, all in the same sentence, to the point where Mike, the new guy, feels pretty stupid sometimes. It's really funny to watch.
I do want to get back into seeing that because, like I said, I saw the trailer and it just, the concept looked fantastic.
Yeah. The first few episodes are pretty formulaic, but after that, it does get better. There's a moment kind of like three quarters of the way through the show where somebody else says something and then one of the main characters goes, "Oh, I have to go," because something that was just brought up has given them an idea and they know how to solve their problem. And that happens a lot in the first few episodes. Like it was like, right. It's like the key turning point before they wrap up the whatever law problem is the, you know, crux of the plot. But after that, it's a little bit more left field and a little bit more of the inter-office politics versus the problem, as opposed to just like a formula.
Like the house way of solving problems.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. You know, and never lupus.
Yeah.
Exactly. I never finished House. It was a good series, but I've watched the first few seasons so many times that I can never remember where I left off.
I think I finished watching it. I know that I watched some of the last season. I just can't remember it well enough to know if I watched the whole thing through. It was one of those kind of shows where there's so much of it the same that I've actually lost track as to if I even finished it or not.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I really enjoyed it. I mean, House has the same appeal as Harvey. In this, like, he's right. Basically in pain and angry and gets to say this shit that no one would ever get away with. The only reason that he's still there is because he's the best, you know, doctor that they have in that department. But in this case, it's the same thing. He's the best lawyer that they have and they can't lose him, so they have to put up with his shit, essentially, is the way that that goes. Yeah,
there's a show that I've been watching as well that again is not sci-fi related, and that's Silicon Valley. They've just finished season two, so I held off just to watch the whole of season two through, because the very first time I watched it, when season one had come out, it was one of those shows I knew was coming out. I missed it and then watched it all in one go, and it is so difficult to not keep watching. So this time it's just like, I cannot wait a week between episodes. I need to just plow through the entire lot. But I don't know if you've heard of Silicon Valley at all.
I have. Are there not two shows that are out there that are similar?
Not sure about a second one, but this one's the one by Mike Judge.
Is this the half an hour comedy?
It is a comedy, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. This is the one that I think I've heard of. There was another one that's on Netflix. I think it's based in Texas.
Oh, you might be thinking of, the name eludes me now. Yeah, I think I know which one you're talking about for the other one.
Yeah, and that I think is more of a, like, an hour-long drama. Like, it's more of a serious take on the rise of technology in Texas, and that
Texas. Yeah, whereas this is a bunch of people trying to start a company out of their garage, just like, you know, like Steve Jobs, Steve Wozniak, and then Bill Gates and everybody else over in Silicon Valley. Well, Bill Gates didn't start out in Silicon Valley, but never mind. You get the point. But it's so compelling and so funny, and just things just change like moment to moment. And there's the main guy, Richard Hendricks, played by, I think it's Thomas Middleditch or something like that. He's not charismatic at all, but he's the CEO, and he's just fumbling his way through, not really knowing what he's doing, but he just has a really good product, which is something that can compress files unlike anything else. And he's in competition with all these other people and just making mistakes left, right, and center, you know, jeopardizing the company 1 minute, saving it the next, and then he's just jeopardized it 2 minutes later. But as a Mike Judge comedy, it is fantastic. And just watching it through, I've literally been kind of like, okay, I'm just going to watch one more episode, and then I need to get up. And before I know it, I've just watched another four.
Oh, six, yeah.
Of them. So at that point, it's like, well, I need to finish it now because I can't just stop right at this point. It's kind of like when you look at The Flash, being the most compelling superhero show on TV, both in terms of drama, in terms of humor, in terms of plot twists and so on. It's that for non-superhero stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard it's really good.
I don't really give too much away because the episodes are quite short.
Oh, yeah. It would march forward pretty fast, yeah.
Yeah, and they're half an hour long, right?
Yeah.
But it's one of those ones where if you can sit down and just blitz through it, my God, you will not regret it at all.
Cool. I don't have any comedy shows that I'm watching right now. I just, when I'm in the mood for comedy, I tend to just grab somebody's stand-up reel from Netflix and go from there. It's just, I don't often, like, I find that comedy shows are one of those exceptions to the rule where I don't want access to all seven seasons of Friends on Netflix all at once. Right. I found that that was a better show. Same with How I Met Your Mother. I found that those are better shows when I had to wait a week in between.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Like, well, especially as they were very similar to each other, you know, I mean, for the 10 years that Friends was on, you know, it was kind of similar, but this is the thing that it's not a comedy in the same sense as that. It's not like Friends. It's not like Big Bang Theory. It's not those kind of laugh out loud kind of comedies.
Right.
It's Mike Judge. So it's very much like Office Space.
Okay.
If you love Office Space, it's that humor.
Okay, more dry.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Cool. Well, that brings us to the end of this episode of the Citadel Cafe. We record, of course, live every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern on thecitadelcafe.com/live. Our mobile audio stream is provided by Alpha Geek Radio. You can go to tunein.alphageekradio.com to find out how you can listen on your favorite audio device. Just choose Channel 1 and the Citadel Cafe at Showtime. Music for the show was composed by Kevin MacLeod, and this episode will be available on demand via iTunes and our website, thecitadelcafe.com. That's also where I will post the show notes to hopefully as many things as I can remember that Alistair and I talked about tonight. You can email the show and do email in and tell us what you're looking forward to with E3, because I did miss a fair bit and I like to hear what kind of is on everyone's brain. I know that Dandry in the chat room was talking about Fable 4. I can't remember which one. And he was excited about some stuff there. And there was another one. He was on the Battlefront, but I feel like there was Fallout 4. Is that the other big one that's coming out with E3? Anyway, I can't really remember. Email the show at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com and let us know what you're looking forward to on E3. Find us by name on Twitter and Facebook, and that's just The Citadel Cafe. My name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything that I'm up to online at joelduggan.com. A big thank you, as always, to our 18 supporters on Patreon. People like Khaled Birdsong. I hope I pronounced your first name right, Khaled. If you enjoy the show, please consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/joelduggan. For as little as $1 a month, you can help support this show, as well as my webcomic, Starcrossed. We are well on our way to our next goal, which is $150 a month, which will involve a redesign of starcrossedonline.com and remove all of the ads from the comic website. You can also follow me on Twitter with just my name, Joel Duggan. Alistair, where can people find you and your goodies online?
Well, on Twitter, I'm at iMcFly. Complete Back to the Future reference there. And my website is ohmyzod.com.
You've been listening to the Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two.
I was swayed by a large model of the TARDIS. It's a very large cookie jar that does the warp noise when you open it.
That's awesome.
It's incredible.
What I really want to know is how many cookies really fit inside of a TARDIS.
I will let you know.
I'm sure it's more than it seems.